Conversations with professionals for professionals in the laundry and linen services industry. This is the American Laundry News Podcast. Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Matt Poe, editor of American Laundry News. This is episode 41 of the American Laundry News podcast, Laundry Operations and OSHA. My guest for this podcast is Steve Alvarado. He's a lawyer at Fisher Phillips, where he represents employers in a variety of labor and employment matters. Steve has substantial workplace safety experience and routinely represents companies in litigation involving the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA. His practice includes investigating significant workplace incidents, managing OSHA inspections, contesting OSHA citations, and defending employers in OSHA enforcement actions. Thanks for being on the podcast, Steve.
Matt, pleasure to be here. Always happy to talk about OSHA issues.
Now, before we start our conversation, I'd just like to remind the listeners that this isn't actual legal advice. This is just for informational purposes. Consult your attorney or representative of choice to get advice related to your situation. Let's start out with a description of how OSHA functions in terms of laundry operations, from the scope of its oversight and power to how involved it gets in operational health and safety.
Yeah, so OSHA was originally enacted, I guess, in the 1970. So that's where their power comes from, right? An act of Congress. And then each state had the opportunity to sort of adopt their own plan if they so choose. I think there's about 22 to 23 states that have done their own plan. And if you don't have your own plan, you're just under federal OSHA. So most of them are pretty similar. There are some that are a little more tougher than the feds, specifically California, which is where I do a lot of my practice. They will be some of the most restrictive that you can run into. If you can make it in California, you can make it anywhere, basically. So that's where their power comes from. In terms of their oversight, they're concerned mainly with worker safety, right? So some worker gets hurt at your facility, that's what they're all about. That's their main focus. There's tons of other governmental agencies that will look into all kinds of other different aspects, from food safety or other things like that. That's not OSHA. OSHA just wants to know if your employees are safe at work. You know, they're going to look at your practices. They're going to look at your injuries, and they're going to sort of evaluate you based on those types of things.
Let's dive into it. What triggers an OSHA inspection then?
The three obvious ones are: if it's a complaint, your employees will sometimes make anonymous complaints to OSHA. Hey, it's not safe because of X, Y, and Z. Now, depending on the level of the complaint, will determine sort of if OSHA is going to come out. And if they do come out, they never tell you, right? That's their thing. They're going to just show up. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes they'll send letters to you saying, hey, we received an anonymous complaint about this particular subject. Please give us a written response showing that you take this seriously. Those are usually pretty easy in my experience. Put a nice detailed response together, some documents to show that you're actually taking this seriously, and you don't hear from them again on that complaint. 99% of the time, that's it. The other way they come out is if a serious injury happens, right? So you're supposed to report those, you know, death, amputation, hospitalization, those type of injuries, something very traumatic. You report those and they're going to come out. Now, if it's a death, they'll usually be out there that day very quickly. Something less than that, usually you get them the next day or in a couple of days at most.
So they're going to be out there no matter what, checking things out then.
They're supposed to be. Now, I won't say they come out 99% of the time or 100% of the time, because I've seen them miss them from time to time too. But deaths, they will be there. I guarantee you they will be there for death. A serious injury, most of the time they're going to be there too. Those are the two big ones. There's also targeted inspections. There are different ways they go about that. They get your 300A data, which is the log that employers are supposed to keep and turn in. They'll look at that data. They have a formula where they go through and look at, you know, elevated rates of injuries. And they'll have a group of employers that they're just going to randomly inspect, if you will, based on that targeted information. Those are rare. You know, if you're on that, it's really just bad luck of the draw sometimes. But those ones can be worrisome only because OSHA considers those wall to wall. So when they inspect you, they're going to inspect everything.
Oh, okay.
Now, if it's an injury like we talked about or a complaint, that particular complaint will say what it is, right? That they have to give that to you. They have to give you that information. They're not going to tell you who made it, of course. Those are always going to be anonymous. But they'll at least say, hey, there's an issue in the washing room with this turbine or something. Something like that. It will be a specific type of complaint. And so your job, or my job specifically, if you will, is to limit OSHA to just that. They're going to want to go other places. They're going to want to do other things. But you just want to keep them in that little box if you can. Same thing with the serious injury, where, you know, wherever it occurs, whatever machine it's on or whatever aspect of the floor, you're going to want to keep it there. You don't want to let them just wander around, because they will if you don't keep them where they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And the way OSHA works is that anything they see, they can cite you for.
So talk about some of the more common ways laundries can come up short in terms of OSHA standards.
Yeah, there's a few. I would say the big one, and this isn't just laundries. A lot of manufacturing clients do this too. Is lockout tagout. Mm-hmm. The lockout tagout refers to the procedures that you have for each individual machine. And I think in today's day and age, everything is getting pretty automated. So you are getting these very large, very complex machines, a lot of moving parts, a lot of things can happen there if you're not careful. So you're supposed to have a specific plan for how you lock out and tag it out. Mm-hmm. That essentially means how you shut it down so that maybe you can service it or clean it or do what you will, so that you don't get inadvertent movement out of it, right? You got to lock it. There's different areas that you should essentially close down so that no electricity gets in there or anything like that that might cause it to move and injure someone who's in there cleaning a certain part. You have to have machine-specific procedures, and that's where a lot of people go wrong. They just have some general lockout, tagout procedure, but you're supposed to have one specific for each machine. You're supposed to annually train on it and do a periodic inspection. Most people are not doing that. They should, but they don't. So that I see that a lot. I like to see the actual procedure for locking and tagging it out on the machine itself, laminated, put it on there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's clicked to everybody. That's a big one. I see that a lot. And usually that pops up when some serious injury occurs, right? Someone's in there cleaning it, and it inadvertently moves, or an employee doesn't know that he's in there cleaning it because it's not locked down and tagged down. It turns it on and then catastrophe, right? You get fall protection sometimes if they're up high working. They don't have a proper fall protection set up, or they're tied off or hooked on. Depending on the type of laundry too, I have some clients that are doing hospital-related laundry.
So yeah.
You run into bloodborne pathogens there. You can get syringes sometimes in those type of laundry. Those are things that you need to account for, right? If they could be exposed, your employees could be exposed to any of those types of harmful bloodborne pathogens, you got to have a program, you know, appropriate PPE. In our case, right, needle-resistant gloves when they're in there grabbing. They don't have to be the full-on ones that stop everything, but they should be the mid-level ones that at least will stop a syringe from getting through it and still offer enough dexterity that they can do their job, right? You also get guarding, so pinch points on the various machines that will be in a facility like that. Mm-hmm. And then I'd say the last one is probably the hazard communication. So launderers are using various chemicals. You're supposed to provide information and training on those chemicals so that they know what they may or may not be exposed to.
What are the consequences then, immediate and long-reaching, of being cited by OSHA?
Yeah, the obvious immediate ones are citations, right? You get a citation, that's a monetary penalty of some amount. And that's going to range based on the type of citation it is. So if there's a serious risk of injury, you will get a serious. If it's just a general one where they're saying, hey, look, you need to have this in place, we don't think it could lead to a huge injury, that would be a general citation. You can also get some more serious ones, willful, which is basically a disregard. And those ones, as the severity of the citation goes up, the fine obviously goes up with it, right? So the fines are the most immediate thing you'll see from day one. Oh, wow, I got fined $25,000, or wow, I got fined $100,000, whatever it may be. The more long ranging effects, and sometimes for a lot of my clients are the most important ones, right?
Right.
Your citation history is easily searchable. Anybody can hop on there, punch in your company name, and see what you got cited for. It'll also show if that was withdrawn because you fought it and were successful, or if it was reduced because you fought it and were successful. That's the long-term aspect, right? Someone might be looking to do business with you, and they might say, hey, I want to do business with companies that are, you know, have a good history and are safe, and they can look this up without ever talking to you about it. Mm-hmm. They'll look it up and see, oh, wow, company X, you know, has had quite a few issues here in the past. I think we'll just go with the other company. We don't want to get entangled in that type of behavior. So long term, you could lose business, right? There's also the, you know, if your workers are getting hurt on a regular basis, that's a work comp that you're paying, could up your rates, which can get expensive. You're missing employees, right? Workflow is interrupted. Those are kind of the long reaching effects of OSHA citations. And then you can get repeat violations. So if you were cited for your HAZCOM, let's say, and then 3 years later, you got the same problem and they come back out, they'll hit you with a repeat. And that just starts to, the fines start to explode. That's like just a multiplier, five times and 10 times, whatever it may be. And instead of the $15,000 citation, now it's $110,000.
Because you didn't address the issue and it keeps happening.
OSHA views you as a repeat offender. Hey, you know, the first time, sure, we kind of understand. You're still getting cited. Fix it. Don't let it happen again. The second time, hey, you guys clearly didn't get the message. We're going to hit you with a repeat serious. And now the fine is, you know, five times what it was before. So that would be a more long-ranging effect.
Then is it beneficial for an operation to be proactive, to have constant communication with OSHA about health and safety issues and standards? And why or why not?
So OSHA would tell you, yes, please communicate with us on a regular basis, right? We'll help you. My thought on that is I'd rather not. Now, I never like to voluntarily invite them in unless, you know, it's required. They do have consultation programs where you can call them up, say, hey, look, I'd like a consultation. I'd like you to come in and see what hazards are here. You know, help me correct these. And they will do that. Now, they'll tell you, look, we won't cite you when we come in. And that's true. They won't cite you for anything on that voluntary inspection. They'll point out hazards. As part of that inspection, though, they expect you to fix whatever it is they identify. So you have to fix those. Could be costly, depending on what it is. It doesn't guarantee that they won't come back out in a few months and inspect you. They say, hey, look, we usually don't, but there's no guarantees there, right? Quote unquote, if you will, right?
Okay.
You get a clean bill of health to just go on about your business for the next year or whatever it is. Nothing like that. They can still show up 2 weeks later if they want. They get a complaint or something happens, or you just end up on the list. They could come out. I mean, I would prefer, of course, that you call your attorney, or if you have a safety consultant that you trust, that you've worked with in the past, to come out and do this for you. Someone that's well-versed in this area that can do everything that they would be doing under the guise of confidentiality without exposing yourself to OSHA and opening anything up. We could even suggest, hey, you need to fix this. Let's find the most cost-effective way to do this rather than OSHA, who might say, hey, look, you need an interlocking gate. It's 10 grand. I'm sorry. There are other ways to go about it, right? They always want to go the most extreme route, but there are other avenues you can go to make it safe or safer, if you will. And also, if you have me or some other safety professional you trust, we can at least help you with how to deal with OSHA too, if they show up. That could be part of the process, right? Because most clients just aren't used to it, right? It's a scare when OSHA shows up and they don't know what to do. OSHA will tell them you have to do this and they'll just listen. And that's not always true. You have certain rights that you can assert when they show up. And that's something I can help prepare them for. And we can get a plan in place of what it is we're going to do when OSHA shows up so that we're not caught off guard.
Well, let's continue along this line and talk about some steps a laundry can take to ensure the operation is OSHA safe. And let's start with some of the easier so-called low-hanging fruit out there.
If you just walk into any facility, the obvious low-hanging stuff that I look for right away when I walk in is, do you have the illuminated exit signs? Do you have, is the ingress and egress free of debris to walk through the facility, right? A lot of these places are very large machines. They usually have some delineated walkway areas for people to traverse through. Are those free and clear of debris? Fire extinguishers in the correct spot, regularly inspecting fire extinguishers. Sometimes you'll see where they'll rig it up so that there's a long extension cord to plug something, and that OSHA generally doesn't like that, right? They want it permanent wiring, if you will, for stuff like that. First aid and medical supplies. And then the stuff that you wouldn't necessarily see, but regular training of your employees, right? And California specifically, we have what's called an IIPP, which is an injury illness prevention plan. Not all states require this, but it's like a basic safety plan. Everyone has to have it. They'll want to see that. We want to make sure that that is up to date. I would say those are all the very low hanging fruit, the very obvious stuff.
Okay. So then let's move on to some of the more challenging but ultimately beneficial steps to remain OSHA safe.
Yeah, and this is a little bit what we talked about at the beginning, right, with some of the common things I see that employers get hit for, the more complicated programs that are not sort of easily understood by the layperson, right, like lockout, tagout, HAZCOM. Like, you really want to spend some time on those types of things, because lockout, tagout, I know the programs, I know what needs to be in there, but sometimes some of these machines are very complicated. You might need somebody who's very familiar with the machine itself to help you with the lockout tagout program for it, right? I can tell you everything you need to have in that program, but the way to go about actually locking and tagging out that very complicated piece of machinery might require some outside help on the best way to do that. So those are the more complicated areas they need to work on. And for me, mid-size or the larger employers usually have the resources available to them, and they're usually fairly knowledgeable or will have dedicated staff to these types of issues. And so for them, I'd say it's probably not as hard, right? That they know what they're supposed to be doing. They just need to make sure they stay on top of it. It's the smaller guys that are a little bit harder, right? I mean, if you don't have a full-time safety staff dedicated to these things, it can be difficult for you to stay on top of all the ever-changing safety regulations you need to. So that's where it would also help for them to at least consult with somebody. Maybe they don't have a full-time safety person going, but at least reach out and get an early consultation, right? An ounce of prevention goes a long ways on things like this. It can at least give you a sort of a head start at the beginning there to help you get ready, deal with these things as best that you can.
Well, earlier you mentioned a little bit about employees. So how can a laundry help its employees understand the benefits of being OSHA safe? And going further, you mentioned this too, train them to be mindful when it comes to the importance of OSHA standards.
In my experience, safety at the workplace permeates from the top down. So the employees know when you don't take safety seriously at your particular facility, right? They'll see that. They'll know how it works. The owner or manager or whoever top dog it may be will be cavalier about safety. Make jokes. Oh, you're wearing your PPE. Ha ha. Like, they won't really take it seriously. And then that sort of trickles down to the mid-level manager, and he also doesn't take it serious. And then that gets the employees, and they don't take it seriously either. So it's important for it to work from the top down. Manager, owner, whoever it may be, should take safety seriously, constantly reinforce it to their managers and employees, and it will sort of trickle down to the average employee. Obviously, you're going to want to train them on a regular basis. Whatever you think that might be, I'd like to see monthly trainings on topics that are of importance. That would be a good start. Some places like to do a pre-shift meeting, 5 to 10 minutes. Hey guys, just want to remind you about X, Y, and Z. Let's stay on top of this. Keep an eye out. Let's have a good safe shift. Something like that, right? Doesn't have to be very long. You want to have an option for the employees to voice their concerns anonymously if they want, whatever you think the best method of that might be, so that they can say, hey, you know, I think this procedure is unsafe, and they don't have to put their name to it. You know, they're always worried they might be retaliated against for making some sort of safety complaint. Should go without saying, please don't retaliate against your employees for making an unsafe complaint, right? Maybe even some larger places will have safety committees that will meet every month. It'll be a couple managers, maybe the safety compliance guy, and then one or two employees as well that can voice their concerns for the group inside of that type of meeting that the company can look at.
Okay, well, let's wrap this up with one more question here. Let's say a listener wants to make his or her laundry more OSHA safe, but they don't know where to start. What first step or first steps would you recommend?
If you're truly starting at zero, right, you have no idea where to begin, I would say you definitely should reach out to somebody knowledgeable in that area. Definitely reach out to get some sort of professional help on where to begin. Might be a little bit of money up front, but that should save you more on the back end without getting entangled in all these problems we've talked about or having your workers get seriously hurt. Many employers go a lot of years without having a serious injury, and then the serious injury occurs, and that sort of changes everything for them. I like to try and get to my clients before that happens, right? Let's do our best to eliminate those, and can't eliminate all of them. Sometimes accidents really do happen. If you can get to them before that catastrophe takes place, it's really a lot more helpful than coming in after the fact. So that would be my recommendation.
This has been a great conversation. Thanks for your time today, Steve.
Thanks for having me on, Matt. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. For the American Laundry News Podcast, this is Matt Poe reminding everybody to keep it clean. The American Laundry News Podcast is a production of American Trade Magazines, LLC in Chicago. The music, titled Holding On, composed by Poddington Bear, is supplied through the Free Music Archive. For more information about future podcasts, visit our website at AmericanLaundryNews.com or consult The Wire, our weekly e-newsletter. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter to stay informed about these podcasts, along with news and information from around the industry. This has been the American Laundry News Podcast.